I'd like to call the House Judiciary Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day. It is 1:24 p.m. We are meeting in the Max Gruenberg Committee Room 120 in the Capitol Building here in Juneau. I ask that you please silence your cell phones. The staff assisting us today is Talia with the Juneau LIO and Sophia with House Records. The following members present is Representative Gray, Representative Carpenter, Representative Groh, Representative Sumner, Vice Chair Allard, and myself, Chair Vance, and we have a quorum to conduct business. On today's agenda, we have two items, and that is to bring back House Bill 97, Self-Storage Units and Liens by Representative Prox, and then bring back House Bill 161, Civil Legal Services Fund by Representative Wright. The first item on our agenda is House Bill 97, Self-Storage Unit and Liens. In its third hearing, we will now continue the amendment process for this bill. If the bill sponsor and staff would please join us at the table, Representative Prox. Vice Chair Allard, may I have a, would you please move amendment number two?
I will. Madam Chair, I move amendment number two. Objection. For the purposes of discussion.
You can't. You move.
I'm sorry,
object.
I'm not here. Okay. I apologize. I'm not with it. It's Valentine's Day.
Any excuse will
do. Vice Chair, I move amendment number two.
Object for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you. We can do this. Representative Prox, would you explain amendment number two?
Amendment number two. On page 5, line 2, insert, after the words revenue, insert the remaining balance from the sale may exceed the limit in AS 3435660, which is a couple of sections above. And, well, let me read this first. I guess maybe this will do it. Currently in the bill, any excess proceeds are held for 3 years. If unclaimed after 3 years, money is considered abandoned and turned over to the Department of Revenue. This amendment clarifies that regardless of the limits on the value of the stored property, any proceeds exceeding that limit are also turned over to the Department of Revenue after 3 years. And roughly the previous section 655, I think it was, deals with the when you put property into a rental unit, you should tell the rental owner the total value of the property. This is worth $15,000. And then if the place burns down or somebody comes and steals it, that was the liability that the facility owner had to the renter. Separate section 660, I think it is. When it comes to the sale, you when you gave your property to the property owner, you thought it was worth $15,000. And then if they have to go to a sale, and lo and behold, they get $20,000 for the sake of discussion. The facility owner still is only entitled to the past due rent and the reasonable expenses they incurred selling it. And then they have to hold on to those excess proceeds for 3 years, waiting for you to come back and collect the extra money. If you don't show up, it still doesn't go in their pocket. It goes into the state's unclaimed property fund. So the facility owner doesn't make any more money either way, regardless of the value. Potentially the state could make some bucks, but that happens on unclaimed property a lot. So that's all it does. So this amendment clarifies, it clarifies that it can exceed the declared value. I don't see any harm in this. People who, it might be helpful for people who haven't studied this as much as I have.
Thank you, Representative Prox. Do we have questions from committee members? Representative Carpenter.
I remove my objection.
Without further objection, amendment number two passes. Vice Chair Allard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move conceptual amendment.
I object for the purpose of discussion.
Vice Chair Allard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This conceptual amendment will replace the word or with and on page 3. Line 6 of the bill, this is a section that will require units to send the initial notification of default. May I, Madam Chair?
Please continue.
Thank you. While emails allow for instant communication, it can be unreliable due to spams, filters, potential email delivery issues, and bounce back emails. Sometimes we don't input them correctly. Postal mail, on the other hand, will physically reaches the recipient's mailboxes, ensuring a higher likelihood of notice delivery. By combining both methods, you reach a broader audience and increase the chances of the notice being received. Emails are susceptible to hacking, phishing, and unauthorized access. Postal mail provides a more secure channel for sensitive information. Madam Chair, I could elaborate a little bit. I can actually give a personal experience that I just had recently, which has led me to want to do this conceptual amendment, if I may.
Vice Chair Allard.
Thank you. Real life story right about to happen. So I rented a car when I came down to Juneau in December. And for some reason, after I left, they were trying to notify me via email that they didn't charge for the gas that I had used here. And so I guess the contract had closed out. So they were trying to get me through email. Unfortunately, I get a lot of emails all the time. And for some reason, I had missed this email. But luckily, they had sent me a letter. And the letter had arrived, but I was already past the 30-day due date, and I was charged a $10 late fee. So I called them, and I said, I didn't see the email. And the rental car company said, we're sorry you didn't see the email. We're going to go ahead and waive it. I said, thank you. I appreciate you sending me a letter because I never would have seen it. And because of that, I was able to pay it, because sometimes if you don't do things that you're supposed to do, it could go on your credit report and other issues. So I also want to state that sometimes these are people's livelihoods. This is their goods in these storage facilities. And I had spoken to a colleague that said, a lot of the times it's trash, but my trash and their trash might be not. And it's very important. So I think this is a very simple, minor change. I think it does good all across the board. And I would appreciate, hopefully the sponsor of the bill will support it. We'll see. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any questions on conceptual amendment number one?
I remove my objection.
Oh, no, the sponsor doesn't have an objection, but the sponsor does not support the amendment.
Representative Proctor.
I think we would be better off as a society if we unplugged the internet entirely. That's my personal preference. But we haven't done that. And the other thing that can happen is that you might live in North Pole, for instance, and you might come down to Juneau and spend a month or so. And it might take quite a bit. I'd have to remember to forward my address and all of this kind of stuff, or go on a vacation or whatever. There's all kinds of reasons why somebody doesn't get the mail. And so the only way to make this really effective would be to require it to be certified mail, return receipt requested. And then the person in the facility owner or their employee has to go through the trouble of mailing it and waiting and thinking and figuring and whatnot. For most of the time, this is just junk. And I, you know, I appreciate that everybody's busy, but it's the onus is on the renter. They have broken the contract, if you will. And yes, we're all too busy. I get that. We should unplug the internet, but we're not going to do that. So I don't think we should put that on the facility owner. They can send out an email. I would expect that most of them will try and call the telephone number if they have one. But they shouldn't be required to do that, to just go clean junk out of their rental unit.
Thank you, Representative Prox. Are there any further objections? There has been an objection. Would the recorder please call the roll?
Ma'am, we do comments. It's Valentine's Day.
Do we...
I remove my objection. I object.
There has been an objection. Would the recorder... Brief at ease. Record. Vice Chair Allard.
Thank you. The sponsor had commented that it would be more prevalent and make more sense if it was certified mail. So I would then amend my conceptual amendment to read both electronic mail and certified mail.
Representative Sumner, would you like to speak to your objection? Are there any questions about the conceptual amendment to the conceptual amendment? Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure if the question is for the sponsor of the amendment or the sponsor of the bill, but to me, it seems like if we're doing email and mail, whether it be certified or first-class mail, that we have the bases covered. So I'm not sure what my question is. I guess it's saying one or the other, but we're changing it to and. So we're covering our bases. Thank you.
Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do want to speak to my objection. So having a post office box, which if I had a storage unit, I would have my mail. I would put my post office box there. I don't know if anybody has been to the Los Sula post office like around Christmas, right? Well, you get a certified mail notice. And there is a two-hour line, okay? I would argue at third times you are less likely to get that mail if it's certified mail than if it's first-class mail, which our post office does a very good job of not losing mail and delivering it. So I actually think you're increasing the cost and reducing the likelihood of the person actually receiving it if you make it certified mail. I mean, certainly they will know if they receive it, but... I mean, there are times of the year where I might go weeks before I bite the bullet and stand in that line to actually go get a certified letter. So I strongly object to this.
Are there any further questions? Vice Chair Allard in wrap-up.
Thank you. And I appreciate that through the chair. I mean, I could go back to first class mail and certified mail, but I'm not going to. So what I would like to say is that is exactly why I have the word and. Because not only are they going to potentially get it via email, the person who's running the storage facility, but and by certified mail. I think we're copied. We owe that to individuals who could potentially have, I'm not going to say it, but I'm going to say it. You don't know what they have in those storage facilities. They could have, I won't say it. They could have loved ones. Ashes in there. They can have antiques in there. These are valuable things to people while they're moving and transitioning, and I just really think this is the safe way to do it. So thank you, Madam Chair. I'm done.
Thank you. Now I'm going to ask for the vote on conceptual amendment to the conceptual amendment. So we are voting on the word certified.
No.
Representative Johnson is absent. Representative Sumner.
No.
Representative Gray.
Yes.
Representative Groh.
Yes.
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Kervian.
Yes.
Four yeas, two nays.
With the vote of four yeas and two nays, the conceptual amendment to the conceptual amendment has passed. So we now have the conceptual amendment as conceptually amended before us. Does the vice chair need to make any wrap-up comments?
I appreciate a yes vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Would the recorder please call the roll on the conceptual amendment as conceptually amended?
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Yes.
Representative Johnson is absent. Representative
Yes.
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 5 yeas, 1 nay.
With a vote of 5 yeas and 1 nay, conceptual amendment has passed. We now have House Bill 97 before us as amended. Do members have any further questions for the bill sponsor? Would members like to make any final comments about the legislation before we continue? Would the sponsor of the bill like to make any final wrap-up comments?
Please move the bill forward out of the committee.
Thank you. Vice Chair Allard, do I have a motion?
You do. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the House Judiciary Committee move House Bill 97, version 33-LS0392S, from committee as amended with the attached fiscal notes and give Legislative Legal Services permission to make all technical and conforming changes as necessary.
Hearing no objection, House Bill 97 moves from committee as amended. We will take a brief at ease to sign the report. Back on the record, for our second and final agenda item today, we will bring back House Bill 161, Civil Legal Services Fund, by Representative Wright in its third hearing. We have received one amendment for House Bill 161 by Vice Chair Allard. Would you care to move your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number 1.
Object for the purposes of discussion.
Vice Chair Allard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am grateful for the work the ALSC has done for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. I am moving this amendment because I continue to hear landlords complaining that the agency unjustifiably targets them. I am certain that some cases are legitimate, but there seems to be a bias against landlords. They generally do not qualify for services due to the assets and income derived from their tenants. However, that doesn't mean they can afford legal representation. Landlords also face financial challenges and take great risk by allowing others to rent from them. I'm not referring to the corporations that own million-dollar investments. I'm talking about the average Alaskan who rents out property to complement their income. Sometimes it's a condo, sometimes it's a room in their house. I applaud the efforts of our fairness and make hotlines and clinics available for both sides. This amendment restricts the use of these funds to activities connected with Landlord-Tenant Act. The agency receives funding from the federal government, local governments, and private donations. That's something that can be leveraged. We are not supposed to take sides or pick winners and losers. Many landlords have everything to lose. This is why I have proposed this amendment.
For your reference, we have Maggie Hum, Interim Executive Director from Alaska Legal Services Corporation online, Sandra Moeller, the Director of Division of Community Regional Affairs. We have David Coons, Alaska Legal Services Corporation, available for to answer any questions. Do members have any questions?
I just wanted to know, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Allard.
Thank you. I was just hoping I can read the amendment on the record.
It's not required, but feel free.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to do page 1, line 1, delete appropriations 2. Page 1, line 11, following individuals, insert, an organization may not use funds received under this section to provide legal assistance for issues arising under Alaska Statute 3403, Uniform Residential Landlord and Tenant Act. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, what is the sponsor's stance on this amendment?
Please state your name for the record, please.
Through the chair, for the record, I am Rachel Gunn, staff of Representative Wright, and I would like to thank the committee for hearing this bill today and also apologize for his absence due to illness today. I would like to answer Representative Gray's question. So through the chair, Representative Gray, this amendment aims to exclude a specific area of legal assistance from the funding scope of the bill. The bill sponsor opposes the amendment for several reasons. This amendment introduces administrative and operational challenges for Alaska Legal Services Corporation, potentially causing an accounting nightmare due to the need to segregate funding based on the type of legal assistance provided. More critically, the restrictions on using funds for legal issues under the Uniform Residential Landlord and Tenant Act could severely impact individuals in dire situations, such as those attempting to escape domestic violence but are entangled in shared lease agreements with their abusers. It's important to note our office didn't receive a letter of opposition from any party, especially landlords, or including landlords, thus far in the process. I would also like to explain here on the record that Alaska Legal Services managed to process 87% of all of their housing cases with no court involvement on their part. The remaining cases are resolved by settlement, uncontested court decision, and court decision. For those not following the math, that's 13% of their cases. On average, they're getting about 700 cases a year, and it only represents 15% of the services they provide, include housing. So a very small amount of their cases. The contested court decisions, one that we'd be talking about where a landlord would have to prolong a case, make up about 3 to 4% of all of Alaska Legal Services housing cases, which would amount to 20 cases in a year, according to the 5,000 cases they're processing. As far as the timeline, the eviction process, unlike other states like California that have really liberal tenant-friendly legislation, Alaska is considered a landlord-friendly state, and the eviction process here differs much. It's radically different from process in other states. We have one of the quickest eviction processes in the nation. The eviction process is less than a month, and that's due to the deadlines of court rule. If the case lasts longer, it's because the landlord wants damages, and then there are many more factual findings needed. The longest housing cases in Alaska courts involve complex commercial properties, which don't apply at all to this organization. So in closing, we do oppose this amendment. We don't want to cause the organization, the legislation was originally drafted to support, more harm than we helped them.
Follow up.
Through the chair, I think this might be for someone from Alaska Legal Services themselves, but do landlords use the landlord-tenant hotline that Alaska Legal Services provides?
We have the interim executive director and then David Coons from Alaska Legal Services Corporation. Whichever one of you can answer that question, please state your name for the record and continue.
Good afternoon. This is Maggie Hum, interim executive director at Alaska Legal Services, and with me is Dan Coons, our Fair Housing Project director. I will take that question through the chair to Representative Gray. Yes, the landlords and tenants are both allowed to call into our landlord-tenant hotline that is held 4 nights a week.
Follow up. Through the chair, would this amendment prevent landlords from receiving assistance from the landlord-tenant hotline?
Through the chair to Representative Gray, this amendment would affect any work done under the Landlord-Tenant Act, which would apply to tenants and landlords equally.
Thank you.
Representative Grow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if this is a question for the staff or the bill sponsor or for Ms. Hum or the other staff for the Alaska Legal Services. So I'll ask, and whoever can answer, please answer. Does your representation in landlord-tenant cases under the Landlord-Tenant Act sometimes involve veterans, for example?
Through the chair. Yes, this is Maggie Hum, through the chair to Representative Grove. Yes. Our representation in landlord-tenant cases involves veterans, seniors, those experiencing disabilities, and those facing domestic violence and other vulnerable populations.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Yeah.
Any further questions from committee members? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I'm not mistaken, since we're not, we don't have any amendments before us to actually address the underlying changes that are being proposed to the statutes in the bill itself. Page 1, line 1, deletion of the words appropriations 2 is changing the title of the bill to the verbiage that says an act relating to the Civil Legal Services Fund, and is deleting the words appropriation, but we're still trying, the underlying bill is still trying to change the amount appropriated. So it appears that the first part of the amendment may be out of order if we're still going to keep the underlying purpose of the bill itself. And I don't understand how this is enforceable. That is a question that I would have to have for if we've got legal online. How would we enforce something like this?
Thank you, Representative Carpenter. We are getting legal on the line right now so that we can address that question. While we wait until they are available, are there any further questions from committee members? Okay, we will take a brief at ease. Back on the record, thank you for your patience. We have been waiting for our legislative legal services attorney to be available to answer the question by Representative Carpenter. So we have Conrad Gunther from Legislative Legal Services. We have a question on amendment number one. Representative Carpenter, would you mind restating your question?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and through the chair to Mr. Gunther. The amendment that's before us that we're looking at is amendment A-1 or A.1. And I understand that you're not the drafter of the amendment, but the question that I have is regarding the deletion of the words appropriation to from the title of the bill. Is that necessary to achieve the purpose of the amendment? And does it conflict with what the bill, the underlying bill, is doing already, since we are addressing the appropriations or something related to the appropriations of the Civil Legal Services Fund?
Representative Carpenter, through the chair, again, this is Conrad Gunther from Ledge Legal. My understanding is that deleting appropriations under the amendment would just make the bill slightly broader in scope. I don't know that it would have much other effect than that.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and through the chair, would deleting the words appropriation to change the title significantly to require a title change vote on the floor?
No, I don't believe so.
Follow up.
Thank you, and a follow up regarding the language on lines 5 through 7 of the amendment. Inserting words that say an organization may not use funds received under this section to provide legal assistance. I'm curious to know from a legal perspective, is that something that's enforceable?
So to the same extent that any action is prohibited by statute is enforceable, someone could, you know, go to the court and seek to enjoin the legal services organization from doing something that was in violation of law. I'm not aware of any provision that gives specific teeth to this, like a penalty for violating that. So I think, you know, standard remedy, like going to a court and seeking an injunction on the action, is what the primary way of enforcing would be.
Okay, thank you. That's an answer I'm looking for.
Any further questions for our Legal Services, Vice Chair Allard?
Do you have any? I don't have
any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Gunther, for being available to answer those questions. So do we have any further questions up on amendment number one? Wrap up, Vice Chair Allard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to be very clear so the public understands that these state dollars would not be able to be used for landlord-tenant disputes. It would be that they would have to, the ACLS would have to use federal dollars in order for those disputes. My reasoning behind it is that we would be able to utilize our state dollars for those victims of domestic violence, divorces, or some, I think she said shady last time, acts that happened to the victims. So I just want to make sure that that is very clear. And also for the record, I was told there were 5,000 cases. And out of those 5,000 cases, 700 of them were related to tenant-landlord issues. That's why I think this is very important that we redirect those funds to be used federally, and then the state funds can go to help our victims. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Allard. Is the objection maintained?
I objected to this amendment.
Then the answer is yes.
There is still an objection. Will the recorder please call the roll?
Representative Groh.
No on amendment number one.
Representative Allard.
Yes.
Representative Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Johnson is absent. Representative Sumner.
Yes.
Representative Gray.
No.
Chair Vance.
Yes.
Four yeas, two nays.
By a vote of four yeas and two nays, amendment number one has been adopted. So House Bill 161 is now before us as amended. Do members have any final questions or remarks? Representative Groh.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm a yes on the bill, although I think that the amendment we just adopted is very unfortunate, and I'm serving notice that I will try to affect it later if I can. There are many of my constituents are tenants. I've personally been both a landlord and a tenant. There's some bad tenants. There's also some bad landlords that cause enormous problems for their tenants sometimes, and letting them forcing the tenants to go sometimes without heat or water. And private sector lawyers are expensive. I know this is a lawyer. So I'll be voting yes. But as I said, amendment number one that we added hurts the bill and reduces its effectiveness. Thank you.
Does the sponsor have any final wrap up?
Yeah. I just want to thank, through the chair, for the record, Rachel Gunn, representing the Office of Representative Wright. We wanted to thank the committee for hearing this bill again today. And I did want to say we do believe that this amendment is detrimental to the spirit of the bill, in that just last little number fact out there. In the Alaska court system, 69% of landlords have representation. 3% of tenants have representation. That includes Alaska Legal Services, anybody they pay for. So just wanted to get that on the record. Thank you.
Vice Chair Allard, may I have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the House Judiciary Committee move House Bill 167, version 33-3, SO746/A from committee as amended with the attached fiscal notes, and give legislative legal services permission to make all technical and conforming changes as necessary.
For clarification, that's House Bill 161. Hearing no objection, House Bill 161 moves from committee as amended. I ask the members please remain so we can sign the sheets. That concludes our business for today. The House Judiciary Committee will meet again next Monday and bring back House Bill 67. So seeing there is no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect it is 2:13 p.m.